The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 654 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show. We have a lot to talk about this week, both of the current gen variety and looking forward to the next gen. But before we do, I'd like to introduce my panel for this week. I'm joined by Tom, right back where we started, Marks.
I think you've given up. I think you.
Yeah, I have.
Your spirits are broken, and you're just not anymore.
Yeah, tell me when I announce I'm leaving in 12 years, tell me what your middle name is.
Okay.
But we're also joined this week by Cam Hawkins from Dual Shockers. Cam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me. This is a dream come true. So I'm very humbled and happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. For those who don't know your work or don't know Dual Shockers, maybe why don't you give us a little background on who you are, what sort of you've been doing in the gaming writing sphere as of late, and sort of your PlayStation history.
I write for DualShockers.com. It's a smaller, I would say well-known still site, video game site. And I've been writing there since April of last year. That's when I got my start in the industry. I've been featured on Inside Gaming, Kind of Funny Games Daily. And when it comes to my PlayStation history, I'm primarily PlayStation 2 was my big time with PlayStation. I have kind of more shifted over to Xbox after that, but I still have a PS4. I had a PS3. I still play the PlayStation games. I love both platforms. And I'm a huge Kingdom Hearts fan. Like, I still see Kingdom Hearts as a PlayStation franchise, despite it going to other platforms now, which I'm very happy about. I was so happy when I heard that it was finally coming to Xbox. That's kind of a little bit about me.
Yeah, I still have that association very much too. And for those wondering, yes, there will be some Kingdom Hearts discussion toward the end of this episode. Maybe that's why Brian and Max aren't here. Maybe it isn't. You'll never find out. But we definitely will be talking about that a little later. Obviously, associating Kingdom Hearts with PlayStation, what is a PlayStation maybe first party franchise that's sort of a favorite for you, either from the PS4 era or beforehand? Like, what really has stuck with you?
Probably say my favorite. I don't want to make this sound like a negative thing. Like, I'm just not a huge fan of a lot of PlayStation first parties, which I know is not a popular opinion, but I would say that my favorite right now would probably be God of War. I've played through all of the games, and I legitimately enjoy all of them. Not all of them are masterpieces or any sort, but I feel like I got something out of all of those experiences from the PS3 as well as 2018. That's probably what I would pick. But when it comes to my favorite exclusives of this generation, definitely Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is likely to go to Xbox in a year or two based off that time exclusivity thing that they're doing. But also Persona 5 Royal is both of those two are definitely my top two favorites this generation.
Nice. Well, you're speaking Tom's and my language, so yeah. we'll have a lot to talk about as the episode goes on. A little bit of housekeeping, though, before we get into the nitty-gritty of discussion. I do want to mention, obviously, normally the show aims to be up every Wednesday. Occasionally, we have some delays because schedules have been crazy with the IGN Summer of Gaming recently. But in addition to our normal episode last week, we also had a Last of Us Part 2 spoiler cast. Sort of. It wasn't our main cast doing the episode, but it was Lucy and myself talking with Neil Druckmann and Hallie Gross, the director and narrative co-lead of that game. So if you want a full spoiler-filled discussion, it is not spoiler-free at all. Make sure you've played that game or don't mind being spoiled on it and check out that conversation. It was a really great discussion sort of about their process and some early versions of how the game was and what it eventually ended up being and changes that went through in development. So I definitely recommend checking that out. And thank you again to Neil and Hallie for joining us for that episode. It was a really great talk to have. I also do want to mention on the topic of The Last of Us Part 2, because it's something that I think we've seen very, very widespread, especially over the last week or so, a lot of unfortunate and just unacceptable levels of harassment thrown at people behind the game, both actors on it like Laura Bailey and, of course, people like Neil Druckmann on the development side. I think it's pretty safe to say all of us here at Beyond, both on the show and not on the show this week, categorically pretty much denounce any sort of harassment of that kind. That is not something that we ever want as part of our community or ever would stand behind in any sort of sense. No matter how you felt about that game or any game in particular, it doesn't give you the right to suddenly be terrible to these people who are, you know, pouring their heart and souls into the work they're doing. There's a way to healthily and critically talk about games and what works and what doesn't in them, but sort of what we're seeing on this like widespread nature is not those ways. And so if you're someone who watches or listens to the show and you've engaged in that behavior, stop it or go away, because that is not something that we stand for or represent. And it's been really much a bummer to see. You know, we've obviously gotten some sent our way just for covering the game, but not nearly on that level. And it's been pretty terrible to see around so widespread. So I just wanted to mention that at the top of the show, because it's definitely something we've seen a lot of and is probably not going to go away anytime soon. But it's safe to say that is not something that we see as part of the Beyond community or, you know, us on the show. So anyway, just wanted to mention that at the top. But I do want to get into, there's a lot of news and big conversations to have both on the PlayStation exclusive side and not. So want to jump into a big piece of news that broke at the end of last week that I actually put a poll up on the IGN Beyond YouTube channel, which was basically we learned that NBA 2K21 for its next gen versions is going to cost $10 more. It'll be $69.99, nice, on the PS5 and Xbox Series X versions, while the standard version, my girlfriend is shaking her head at me. While
I'm
the
shaking my head at you.
That's fair. That's completely fair. I'm looking at the run of show right now, so I couldn't see, but that's very fair. The current gen versions will be the normal $60 price point, but the next gen versions will be $70 essentially. And the only way to get sort of the cross-gen purchase that we've seen some games do, like Marvel's Avengers will do, Cyberpunk will do, giving you essentially like free upgrades to the next gen versions. That is only available with the Mamba Forever edition, which is the special edition of the game, regardless of which generation you buy it on. That's the only way to sort of get that cross-gen purchase without buying the game twice. And I do want to touch on that a little bit. Essentially, we are looking at this is sort of the first indicator that next gen may come with it a price jump. We haven't really seen games uniformly go up in price since the beginning of the 360 era, when some EA games and Call of Duty sort of started to usher in that change, along with a lot of other games, and eventually $60 became the norm. But we actually did reach out to the Beyond community and asked on YouTube, as of the time I'm reading this poll, 1,600 votes came in. Basically asked, are you okay with this price change? Do you mind spending a bit more on games? Are you not happy about it? Will you wait for sales? 52% of the votes, so a little over 800 votes, said not happy about the change and that people will probably just wait for sales to happen more often, because games go on sale very quickly and very often these days. Whereas 39% said they don't mind spending a bit more. So, you know, a roughly a 13% difference. And then 9% of the vote said they're going to just stick with PS4 games for the time being instead of worrying about upgrading at all. So I want to talk to both of you guys and definitely ask, how do you feel about this price change? If we do see it being something across the board, do you think it's time? Do you think it's unfair to consumers? How do you hope it'll change things? Cam, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think the price increase is kind of expected. Like, I feel that $60, mm-hmm. even for the games that we're getting now, is kind of a steal, knowing, especially for the major first party and AAA games with so much content, like $60 seems to be a pretty fair price, and going up $10 more with this next generation, I honestly thought it was going to, if it were to go up, it were to go up to $80. So 70 seems, you know, reasonable in that sense. But yeah, I get why people are upset. Obviously, you know, some people, like, I remember when I was younger and I could only get a few games a year, if that. But now these games last so much, I feel like last so much longer. And I know that there was this silly commentary on Twitter like a week or two ago about how the games are too long. And I'm like, well, now, you know, that games are too long for those consumers that aren't following the news, that aren't following what we do and all that jazz. They get their money's worth. You know, they're getting a satisfactory experience for the price that they pay. I personally think that it's okay, but I think in a more general stance of people that don't follow gaming news and things like that, that it might cause some outcry about it.
So that's funny, because I'd actually, like, I don't disagree with anything you said. I do think it's, like, I kind of expect the people that don't follow gaming news to sort of just not even notice. Like I think that's why 2K probably feels comfortable making the move, maybe, is just because, like, people are just, like, that audience is just kind of going to buy NBA 2K, right? Like, it doesn't really, like, they don't think hard about that decision every year necessarily. And that's not throwing shade at that community or anything like that. It's just, like, one of those game series that just sort of sells. And, like, the thing I will say is, like, I think the timing of this is not surprising at all to me. Like, lining it up with new consoles is absolutely just, like, the thing that makes sense to do. People are already spending, you know, hundreds of dollars on a new console and are already flexible, and suddenly you can justify it being more expensive when it's like, oh, this isn't a PS4 game, it's a PS5 game. And it's like, it seems like a different thing. But I do agree with you in that, like, I don't have much of a problem with it, right? Like, I personally, it's like, it's not a huge difference. There's a lot of arguments about, like you said, inflation, you know, like, this should probably technically be even more expensive if you're kind of thinking a lot about it on those terms. But also, totally with you in that, like, man, games are already expensive. like 60 bucks is a lot of money for anybody, like, or for a lot of people. And, like, just a little bit more expensive, it's just like, it feels like a little bit of salt in the wound a little bit. And so I totally understand why half of the listeners would be, like, annoyed by this, because it is annoying, right? Like, no matter how rational it is, I guess is the right way to put it, like, all the reasoning behind it is, like, tracks in a lot of different ways, but at the end of the day, it's like, you have to pay more money for a thing you want, and, like, that's a bummer. Like, yeah. Pretty much.
Totally. Yeah, I agree with both of you on that, because I think rational is the right word, because it does, when you look at, like, the money and the increase in development costs and just, like, all the factors that go into what games are today, it makes sense. Like, I don't think it will be hard to argue that the amount of content that is probably going to be in The Elder Scrolls 6 will not be worth $70. Like, yeah. If you want to, a lot of people like to just do, you know, like, a pure, and it's not something we consider in our reviews, and Tom, you can speak to that, but we don't, like, consider price as part of the way we evaluate games, correct? That hasn't changed.
No. It's there are certain moments where it can, like, become a little bit of a factor or have a little bit of an influence on something. But the thing, generally speaking, for just, like, a single player game that's not going to be a live service or not free to play or anything like that, is, like, if you're considering, if you're heavily considering cost into the scoring of the game, then like, is every $0 game a 10 out of 10? Or like, does the score go up as the price gets lower? Like, it introduces a lot of questions that are like, it's for just like a full price game, it's better to just evaluate. We think it's better to just evaluate it on like its merits as a game. And then like, if you want to wait for a sale, because what we thought of the game is not enough for you, that's fine.
Yeah, I do. Sorry, Cam, go ahead.
I just think like in general, another thing to put into perspective is that most games outside of Nintendo first party, for the most part, go on sale pretty quickly after releasing. So if you're mad about the $70 price tag for like moving forward, not to say that all games are going to be like that, but at least like with this NBA example, just wait a month and it'll go down $20.
Yeah.
And then get it, you know? So go ahead.
I was just going to say Watch Dogs Legion isn't even out yet, and it's $40 on Amazon today as we're recording. So
yeah. Cyberpunk is $10 off, and that game is definitely going to be worth more than $50. So
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz, and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's a very funny thing, because I totally get what you're saying, Tom, in terms of like, I totally understand and sympathize with our audience, because especially for the people who are just buying, you know, three or four games a year, or who do need to wait for deals, because it is a lot of money in general to be asking for an entertainment product. Like $10 more does feel like a little bit, well, I'm already paying 60. I do think, you know, both of you have sort of mentioned, I'm curious what this means for microtransactions going forward, because I've seen a lot of people be like, well, if this $70 is offsetting some of the increase we've seen in games finding ways to get you to pay money after they've come out, I'll be more okay with it. I'm inclined, maybe cynically, to believe it's not going to really lead to much of a change in that regard. I don't know how both of you feel. I feel like microtransactions are going to kind of be the same in next gen.
I don't think there's going to be really any change in that sense. This is just based off the base game price, and you know, if they do any little additional DLC packs or anything like that, some games do with their base game launches. I don't think it's going to affect microtransactions at all.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, and a big thing I think I'm interested to know is, at the end of the day, if games sort of do uniformly get this increase in price, where is that money going? Is it just going into the pockets of sort of the big CEOs and execs at all these companies? Is it helping fund these games more, whether it's to employee salaries or into, you know, just the sheer money going into the technology behind these games? Like, how is that extra money being put back into the product and the people making those products, I do think is a big question that we can't really get an answer to until we're a few years into the generation, probably. But the other part of this announcement to me, I want to sort of both hear from you. How do you feel about essentially being charged for the cross-generation upgrade? Because you do need to buy the special edition, which is $99.99, to get that upgrade, or both generation versions if you want a previous gen version, I guess, if you're buying on PS5. How do you both feel about that? Do you think this should sort of be a uniformly free thing if a game company is going to offer any sort of upgrade program? Because we do have the smart delivery service on Xbox, but PlayStation doesn't have a uniform initiative. Cam, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I definitely think that if they offer some new upgrade, that that should be the option, period. But I can so when I see that the, you know, the price tag to get the cross-gen upgrade once they get the next gen console, and like if you're getting it at launch, like you're planning on getting the PS4 version, picking up the PS5, and then immediately wanting to get the PS5 version, then it kind of feels a little sleazy, because you know you're paying all this extra money and you see these other games that are being upgraded for free, like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, for example. But when it comes to if you're waiting like a year or 6 months or something like that, then maybe it's more reasonable, like in that sense. But just knowing from the get-go that there are other developers doing this for free, it does look a little bad.
Yeah, I think we're sort of in uncharted territory, right? Because this is the PS3 and the PS4 had this a little bit, but not nearly to the extent where, like, now, 7 years after that, that console jump, we're in a situation where you can update games and change the look of games through a patch, and that's just ubiquitous and easy, right? Like, we're used to that now. So the idea that you'd have to, like, buy a special version of the game in order to get that patch is like a little weird, especially when, and this is the thing about all these, like, this is the PS5 upgrade, and I'm going to get a little bit like PC gamery here, so I apologize for that. But the PS5 upgrade is just like max settings or higher settings on a PC version, right? Like these upgrades, quote unquote, and maybe they'll prove me wrong, I don't know this for sure, but like these upgrades are really just like tuning it up better because the system can run it better, which is great. Like, that's awesome. I'm glad they're doing that. But it's not like I don't, at least, and this is speculation, but I don't expect the upgrade that you're going to be getting to be like new work they're putting into the game specifically for this version. If it's a PS4 game that's going to get an upgrade on PS5, if they're releasing a PS5 version separately, that's a different story. And I'm not talking about that, but like, in that context, it feels weird to be like, you need to pay $20 more in order to get like these higher settings, essentially. And again, we're in uncharted territory, so I might just be like not knowing what I'm talking about here. But like, that's the way it looks, at least. Yeah. And that makes me more uncomfortable, especially when, like you said, Cam, you can just like get Assassin's Creed and get the better version.
Yeah, and NBA is a bit of a weird situation where they've said the next-gen versions are built from the ground up, but again, we don't know what the real difference in development was.
Right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, yeah. And I will totally own that if I'm wrong.
We'll never know, because, you know, these no game will ever come out ever again, unfortunately. The discussions are over. No, obviously, hopefully we'll have a bit more clear picture of all of this, but I totally agree with you, Tom, as you're saying, like, we're in very weird uncharted territories, because PlayStation did have cross-buy as a thing for the PS3, PS4, and even Vita. That was a big service that they implemented, but is not something they're bringing back, at least in name yet. Right. So we're in a weird situation where it's unclear how every company is going to proceed, since there's not a uniform plan going on. I did want to briefly mention, because I know it got some pickup around Twitter, but your perhaps to some spicy, but not to me, take on the price increases when people get mad about indie game prices or smaller game prices.
Yeah, no, I just like, this is like a... This is very, and I don't, I'm having fun. This is lovely. But this is like whole thing of like, should games be 10 more, like AAA games be $10 more to me, is such a like a tired conversation when, like you said, we don't know where that money's going. We don't know if it's going to devs, if it's just going into corporate pockets, if it's offsetting payments that we already seen. But like, meanwhile, half the conversation around Untitled Goose Game was like, that game's $20, really? And it's like, come on, guys, like, they made a fun game, like, just pay them the money. Like, yeah. People, developers deserve to be compensated for the work they put into these things, and people are so unwilling to pay higher prices for indie games, but like suddenly we're having conversations around like $60 or $70. And it's just like a weird sort of thing. And so I tweeted a spicy take because I'm against my better judgment, because my general policy in life is never tweet anything.
A reasonable policy to live by. And we'll find out if people get mad at whatever we tweet about next. But I agree with you. They will. Yeah. I agree with you. I always go back to, especially because it's a recommendation you made, Return of the Obra Dinn. That I would never say, yeah, it's worth it if it's on sale. Like, that is just, that game is worth whatever they're charging for that game. Go play that game. It's
Hollow Knight is $15.
Yeah. Undertale, like, is $15. Like, right. Like, that game is so good.
Like, I would pay $40 for Hollow Knight happily, right? Like, it's yet we're debating whether, you know, people still call that game, be like, oh, you know, it's, wait till it's on sale. And it's like, come on.
Yeah, there is deep rooted problems when it comes to sort of the economy by which we judge like the value of a game per dollar value. And it's a good important discussion to keep having, but like you said, there are a lot of more factors to it than just $10 more for a next gen game, good or bad. There's a lot more to it. But speaking about a game that was perhaps put into several parts and people have discussed whether or not it will be worth all the money in the end, Final Fantasy VII Remake. The developers are talking about part two. Surprisingly, it's not been named. Of course, we don't have a release date. We haven't seen any of the game. Like Cam was saying early on, that game is presumably, the part one is also coming to other consoles at some point, because it's only got roughly a year exclusivity on PlayStation. But we don't really know about the future of what Remake as a game or series of games looks like, except for the fact that development on part two has, quote, temporarily dropped below 100% efficiency due to the remote working situation that the team is facing. In an interview with The Guardian, co-director Naoki Hamaguchi and producer Yoshinori Kitase were asked about the effects of COVID on the first part release, and then especially on part two. They said, quote, the release of the game happening during the unprecedented situation has blindsided us. At this current time, the team are still making the next game via remote working. Our performance will temporarily drop below 100% efficiency because of this, but I do not think there should be a big impact in the long term. Granted, we first had Final Fantasy VII Remake announced half a decade ago, and then we learned about it being multiple parts within that half decade, and then it finally came out, and it's still not done coming out. Presumably there will be a next gen version. Presumably it'll probably come to PC and Xbox, maybe on the Switch, who knows at this point. But my question to both of you is basically, when do you think we're going to see part two? I mean, we know they're working on it, but how realistically far away do you think part two, or whatever it's being called, is?
Dude, I have no idea. I want to hear what you're saying, because I literally have no clue.
I think we're gonna get it spring 2022.
Okay.
I think that is reasonable. I think that because the thing is that they already have the main party's character models done, like at least of those that have been introduced. You know, there's like four more party members that you still need to join. So there's that to put into perspective. I don't think they're going to end up changing engines to Unreal 5 when that drops. I think they're just going to stick with Unreal 4, which is, you know, perfectly good. And I think that it's farther along than we think it is. So that's kind of where my head's at, that I think that I think at the very earliest, it's going to be spring 2022. And I think that they're going to keep the trend of releasing it in spring.
So like every 2 years, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I personally think the game's going to be in three parts. I think that anything more than that would just be ridiculous. but that's where I'm at with Final Fantasy VII Remake. And I know that like Tetsuya Nomura said that he wanted to release it in multiple parts, like in smaller parts. And I love the guy. He's a god to me. But that is a terrible idea. Do not do that, Tetsuya Nomura, please.
Yeah, I think they will meet diminishing returns if they go beyond three parts. I like the trilogy model does work for a reason in entertainment, but yeah, I think they had a fantastic like launch with this game on just the PS4, and I'm sure it'll do, you know, continue to do well as it comes to other consoles, but I do think you start to rub an audience the wrong way when you're like, hey, our experimental but also nostalgic remake of one of the most beloved RPGs of all time is going to be 7 parts to match the 7 in the title. Have fun.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. I like, this is the funny thing though about the way it got delayed and then it being in parts and all this stuff is like, now this, the first game and the second game, no matter when it comes out, are going to split generations. So like my concern is like, are they going to have to start over at some point, right? Or are we going to be playing a PS4 level game that they're just building off of the back of, like for part 3 in 4 years, theoretically, right? Like that's us all guessing and kind of speculation. But like that's such an interesting thing to me. Because and it's part of why it's so hard for me to gauge this. I think your theory about every 2 years or like roughly or at least spring 2022 or any of that, I think that's probably like a good angle, right? Like, I think that's a good kind of like shot. But like, man, I have such a hard time getting my own sort of beat on this. Like it just is. It's there's so many different factors and they've said so little that I just have no sense of how to like get my footing with it.
Yeah, and I think that with the development cycle of part 1, I know that for me and for a lot of people, we're just like, are they going to nail this? Are they not? Are they gonna slip? Like,
yeah.
Especially with, you know, people being disappointed in Kingdom Hearts 3, that people were just like, oh man, I don't think Square Enix, you know, has the touch anymore. You know, Final Fantasy 15 was kind of a disaster with the development cycle. And then they nailed it, in my opinion. Like, they completely nailed it. So for me, like, I'm not really too stressed about this news. I'm just like, okay, when it comes out, it comes out. I have my trust in them now at this point, at least with the Final Fantasy VII Remake project, that things are going to turn out well. And when they come out, they come out.
Well, it's also funny when stuff like this COVID thing happens where they're like, we're not operating at 100% capacity. And it's like a delay of a thing you never announced. Right. Like,
yeah,
like we didn't know what 100% capacity was aiming for. So saying you're at like 80% is like, OK, I guess that's like we still don't know what the like where we're working with here.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we all by and large, the reception to Remake was pretty positive. But I think the lead up to it was filled with so many questions and issues that could be solved by them just not saying so much. If they just say, hey, we're going to go develop this thing, we'll talk to you soon when we have an update that's worth telling you. And then they just go heads down. I think the more things they say, the more complicated it will get. And I am okay if they just decide, hey, we're going to work on this and we don't hear about Remake Part 2 until at the earliest E3 next year. That's fine with me. You know, there's a few other major games to come out in the interim. Since I do want to get to some more Square talk later on, though, I do want to get through a little bit of the other news that's happening. Just briefly, I did want to mention PlayStation announced a renewed PlayStation Indies focus. They launched a new website for PlayStation Indies and essentially did a state of play, but only on the blog, the PlayStation blog. They didn't do like a video sort of carousel thing like they have for other state of plays, where they announced a host of indie games coming to PS4 and PS5. Just to run down the list, there was Forged in Shadow Torch, or FIST, or Fist, Maquette, I don't know, Where the Heart Is, Creaks, Heavenly Bodies, Recompile, Carto, Haven, Worms Rumble. And that was a list of all of the games that are coming. Some of these had already been announced. Some were more just confirming them for PS5 launches. Some were brand new announcements. I wanted to ask both of you, especially Tom, with you on the panel, and I would say as the bastion of indie support at IGN, is. But for me, what I loved about the launch of the PS4 was Sony really being all in on indies, and it not just being about the first party stable or third party, you know, AAA games. It was big games were standing alongside stuff like Octodad and Transistor, and all that sort of stuff was given equal weight for the most part, I would say. But that really like tapered off as this generation went on. And I would say the Switch kind of took the mantle of like the place to play indie games. Are you just seeing this and just seeing sort of the initiative they're doing, and they have made some recent hires and transitions in the leadership, do you think we're going to see this in the long run be a continued focus for them? Or would you say this feels sort of like lip service at the beginning and we'll have to just wait and see?
We'll have to see. I think just in general, like I don't necessarily think it's just lip service, because yeah. PlayStation has proven that they are willing to and excited to support indies, like you said, but like, it's not 100%. Like it's in their control, but it's like, it's not 100% in their control. This is something I talked to when I went up to Canada a little while ago and spoke to the people at EXOK Games, who are the developers of Celeste and Towerfall. And I did a big interview with them. And one of the things we talked about was like that cycle, right? Because indie support is cyclical, where it was Xbox Live Arcade for a really long time was the place you would go to get indie games. And then it became the PS4 and the Vita. And then it became the Switch. And like it's gone in these cycles. And the way they explained it was like, it's whoever's offering the best deal to these developers, right? And now there's enough developers that it might be easier for like Nintendo to be able to do that, while Sony does that, while Microsoft does that. But really it's going to come down to like, what is the stuff we don't see, to be honest? Yeah. It's going to be the stuff of like, what is Sony doing behind the scenes to give these guys support? And I think something like this, where it's like, we're going to spend a whole day talking about these indie games and talking about how we're excited about them coming to PS5, is cool. Like that's lip service, but it's lip service that may mean something.
I will say they have, excuse me saying lip service wasn't indicative necessarily of how I feel, because I do think they've made some hires recently. Greg Rice, who used to be at Double Fine, I believe, has come on in an indie focus capacity, a partnership capacity. So, and they moved Shuhei into a different position that is more indie focused. And has always been such a big proponent of that. And so giving him that focused role with Greg on the team and, you know, this sort of renewed focus, I hope does mean that the PS5 will be a great home for indie support.
Yeah, I think it's totally possible.
Cam, how do you feel about that?
So I kind of following up with what you guys are saying, I think it's something that we should take seriously, because Shuhei is in this position, and like, so I think that's when I'm like, okay, they're actually committing to this. And I think that, and I think they proved that as well with the PS5 presentation. Like some of the, outside of like Spider-Man, which, you know, obviously got me really hyped, the best things I saw, in my opinion, were indie games. Like Little Devil Inside really stood out to me, and Kena, Bridge of Spirits, I think it's called.
Weeks later, all anyone's talking about is Bugsnax, right?
Like, yeah.
Talking about Bugsnax. And so, yeah, I think that PlayStation is trying to be like, hey, we're having major third party or first party games, and we're also, you know, committing to having great indie titles as well. And I think that just depending on kind of what you said, Mark, on Tom Marks, on the inside, where developers are being offered, getting these offers, like now there's kind of an appeal to everywhere. Like Switch has, you know, Switch is just known for indies at this point, but then Xbox has Game Pass. And I know that we've seen that people say that, yo, sales have quadrupled because of Game Pass and for these less popular titles. But now with this PS5, like I think it would be really cool if they did similar to what Nintendo does with their Nindies, you know, the indie world thing, and do that with like State of Play. Because for me, State of Play is never really, like, I never been impressed by anything that they've shown during a State of Play. But like if they made it so like, hey, here are all the big indie games that are coming out first to PlayStation 4, and do it that way, I think that would be a really good way to signal boost those games. That's kind of where I'm at with it, but I'm looking forward to seeing what PlayStation does, because I feel like now there's something for each platform to try and get these indie developers to release their games on their platform first.
Yeah, I think as both of you are saying, if all platforms can support it, it will only mean better things for the dev community overall, because it's more places to be promoted. It's more avenues to get funding. It's all that stuff. The Game Pass, the ID at Xbox program, if PlayStation has this renewed focus. I'm excited about it. Like you both were saying, I think a lot of stuff in that PS5 reveal was the coolest stuff was mostly the indies that really got me excited. And so I'm hopeful for the future, but it is one of those things where we'll just have to wait and see what we're talking about 3 or 4 years from now. I do want to talk about what we've been playing and games we can talk about that are out now, but I do, before we run out of time, I do definitely want to make sure to leave a little room, and so I'm going to shift the run of show, I'm so sorry, to talk about Kingdom Hearts first.
Absolutely.
welcome to the return of the Kingdom Hearts Minute that will go on for a little bit longer than a minute in the lead up to what was really funny. My favorite thing, just a small aside about this segment that I introduced while hosting the show, was that people thought Max and Brian were actively limiting me from talking about Kingdom Hearts on Beyond, as if I was only allowed for a minute. I just thought it was funny to have to blurt it out without breathing for 60 seconds and see how much I could say. So there was never any behind the scenes, you know, prevention of me talking about Kingdom Hearts. But
all their indignation about Kingdom Hearts was very front of the scenes. It was
exactly. Yeah.
You saw it all.
Yeah. And if I wanted to make it 2 minutes, I could have, but you know. Anyway, I do want to talk about it because I know, Cam, you're a big fan of the series. And Tom, at least we have talked about it enough that I know you can understand and appreciate the franchise.
Oh, I like Kingdom Hearts.
I know.
Yeah.
Just without exasperated sighs waiting to talk about Yakuza, Max. I love Max, and I promise I will play Yakuza at some point. But anyway, we're here to talk about Kingdom Hearts.
I'm the same way. Like the DualShocker staff, huge like Yakuza fans, and we gave Judgment our game of the year last year. I got completely blindsided. I was just like, what? Because we were discussing it, and everyone was like, Judgment. I'm like, what? I knew this game was like good, but you guys didn't make it seem like it was game of the year material. But yeah, so I recently bought all the Yakuza games, and I'm planning to hopefully play through all of them leading up to Like a Dragon later this year.
Nice. I'm excited for that too. And yeah, I sort of have had a similar thought that I'm going to jump into that series before Like a Dragon. So hopefully we can have a part two to this discussion with Max involved, but he's not here. So let's talk about Kingdom Hearts. Cam, I do want to get your thoughts, since it's obviously not something we had you on the show at that time, but how did you feel overall about Kingdom Hearts 3, especially now so far removed from it? And I guess compounded on that, the most recent release with the Remind DLC.
Yeah. So, man, Kingdom Hearts 3 is, I still love Kingdom Hearts 3. I think that they definitely took some obvious missteps. And I think the biggest misstep that they did was that they tried to make this game a soft reboot for the series when it was the last entry of the Xehanort saga. So that was just like a big miss to me. And also going back to the One World visits, I thought Kingdom Hearts 2 had the perfect structure where she's like, okay, the first visit's going to focus on the Disney story. Second one's going to focus on the Kingdom Hearts story. It was just kind of pointless. It was just like Sora literally just in this world following these characters. And that was kind of it. Like it felt very disjointed. Like when Flynn gets stabbed in the tower, and then Sora, Donald, and Goofy are just sitting there on the at the windowsill, it was just like, why are you guys here? It didn't make any sense. It just felt really out of place in that sense. I think that overall, 3 just took almost every misstep to what 2 did. Because I think 2 is just like, I think 2 is a 10 out of 10 game. I think the game still holds up today. I think the combat is the best the series has had. You know, them removing reaction commands was really disappointing. I think that was like a really great factor into Kingdom Hearts combat. At the end of the day, I still really love the game, despite its missteps. I think that the Remind DLC, at least the second half, because the first half was kind of like a rehash, but you could play as like Riku and Roxas and during the when you're going through the labyrinth and things like that. But I think that the I'm still like interested in where the story is going to go. Like, I want to know more about Lushu and the Foretellers. I want to know more about the Black Box. Like, those are the things that I want. And then Yzora, like, what is any of that? So it's really interesting, and I'm looking forward to I think the second half of the Remind DLC was what fans wanted in the base game. Like, when the seven lights are fighting the 13 Xehanorts in the circle, like, that was exactly what I wanted. That was what that, like, cemented the reasons, like, this is why I love Kingdom Hearts, you know. And then, like, when Mickey is going towards the giant keyhole, I'm like, this is what I love about Kingdom Hearts. And I feel like a lot of that was kind of missing in the base game, but then they kind of fixed it with the Remind DLC. But hopefully moving forward, I hope that they kind of more look towards what Kingdom Hearts 2 was as a game, like, across the board, and use everything that worked, which is the vast majority of that game, and put it in the inevitable Kingdom Hearts 4 first mainline Kingdom Hearts game for this new saga, because you know, the missteps that they took, and kind of, it just kind of felt like a mixture of, like, 1 and 2. Like, the good things of 2 were there, but then, like, kind of like the bad things of 1 were there. I don't know. But, you know, I love Kingdom Hearts. It is my favorite franchise. Kingdom Hearts 2 is my favorite game of all time to this day. And I'm looking forward to where the series is going. It's Nomura is a really interesting storyteller. And I kind of get why people are kind of turned off by Kingdom Hearts. Some people are just like, oh, it's Disney characters. I'm just like, that's cool, what are you talking about? But then there's other people that just, like, kind of don't understand, like, the way Nomura does his storytelling, because it's a lot of visuals and a lot of metaphorical storytelling that if you just take it for what you're seeing, you're not going to really understand. But if you, like, think about what that represents, the representation behind things that happen throughout the games, I think you'll be able to connect to it more. And even then, there are some things where I'm just like, you know, I'll be browsing the internet and they'll be like, oh, this was what that meant, and I'm like, I didn't even think about that. There's so many layers to the characters and the story and everything like that. It's a great franchise, you know, for better or worse. You know, there's definitely not some great Kingdom Hearts games, but I think that all of them are worth playing at least once, for better or worse. And I love it.
That was a very succinct encapsulation. I appreciate that. the further I get away from KH3, the more I think about how it's so clearly a product of its time when it comes to the Disney factor, because like you were saying, the Disney stuff feels so, so isolated from one another. And what I fell in love with as a kid, especially when I was younger with the earlier entries, was the blending of Disney franchises and everything. But these worlds felt so sectioned off, and, like, what happened in each of them really didn't matter to the overall story, in an unfortunate way that lost a lot of the charm that I think made those early entries so beloved and kind of, like, helped catapult the series to what it is today. I don't know if we could ever have that again, honestly. Like, it's one of those weird things where, because Disney is what it is now, I don't know if they would allow that sort of melding, at least, like, with their biggest franchises. I almost wish the next Kingdom Hearts games went towards some of the, like, lesser known or the less marquee franchises, where it's like, yes, it's not Frozen and Tangled and you don't have that name recognition, but honestly, working with some of the smaller stuff, maybe they could do some more interesting crossover ideas. But yeah, we're at a very interesting place. I totally agree with you. It's like a very weird crossroads for where the series can go from here. And it, like, it did feel like they were trying to soft reboot it in case they can't do too much Disney stuff in the future. But it did take away from what that game was trying to do. But, you know, at least we're getting a music game next. So
yeah, looking forward to it. And it's canon. It actually has a story to it.
It will have It'll have important, meaningful story implications, which is very Kingdom Hearts at this point. I do, yeah. I sound like I'm joking. I am actually really excited for that. I loved the At Rhythm. And I think, like, regardless of the ups and downs of the series, the score is, I'd say, almost the consistently great thing. Like, no matter what, the score is just so good. Yes. So playing a music game set to that score is a fun opportunity to me. I just am all surprised, but also not surprised that we'll have heavy story implications as we go further.
Just a quick, like, tangent, just really quick. Yes. Do you think Sora's coming to Smash? Do you think it's going to happen?
I don't think so, because of licensing stuff.
Yeah,
because you can't put Sora in Smash without putting Donald and Goofy in Smash.
Yes, you absolutely can. You can put Riku in there. You can put Roxas in there in the background. Make Dive to the Heart, the main stage, with the stained glass. Oh, like, yeah. Perfect.
All right. I can see that.
It definitely works. It definitely works. And the thing is, like, people are like, oh, Disney wouldn't allow it. Like, why wouldn't Disney allow it?
But weirdly, it's not just Disney in my eyes, because it's Disney, but also, like, Square Enix was really, really, like, restricted with putting Cloud in Smash. Like, there was a single song, and, like, it was really, really, like, they did not give Nintendo much there. So I'd love to see Sora in Smash, but, man, like, I don't know. It sounds like a nightmare of, like, how many people have to sign that piece of paper.
I understand Cloud, because Cloud is literally their poster boy of sorts, where they want his treatment to be exactly how they want it. But, you know, we have Hero, and, you know, Dragon Quest is arguably their biggest franchise in Japan. But so why can't we get Sora? Like, you know what I mean? But that's all. I just wanted to quickly ask if you guys think that it realistically will happen. I pray every night. I'm not a religious man, but I pray every night.
I don't think it's impossible. Like, I definitely think the clear fan demand, they know, and it will definitely be. I'm curious who the fighter number two is for this second round of characters. I think that'll be a little more telling, because Min Min isn't really indicative of any other, like, third party collaboration, because it's obviously a Switch exclusive. So this is more suited for NBC for sure. Sorry, Tom. But I think it is possible, but I honestly, my answer will depend on who the second character probably is more so than anything. I think once we see that, this also tells me very clearly we need to have you back to have a more in-depth Kingdom Hearts retrospective. So let's talk offline or online, but off the show, and figure out some other Kingdom Hearts fans to corral for a show, because I think we have a lot we could do. But Tom, I do want to get to, and apologies to Red, our producer. I know we're going to run a little bit long. Please forgive me. I'll help you figure out what to cut for some of the... We will, because I want to hear you briefly mention you reviewed Marvel's Iron Man VR, which is, you know, arguably the biggest PSVR exclusive this year that we know about. You gave it a 7. You called it good. It's something I've had some hands-on time with. I haven't beaten the campaign, but I played for a couple hours last night and had played in preview builds, and thought we should just open up to you to hear your sort of overall thoughts on playing.
Yeah, no. So if you want to hear any of my extended sort of, like, better thought out stuff, you can check out the review on IGN.com or YouTube.com/IGN, obviously, shameless plug. But I enjoyed Iron Man VR. I wasn't like blown away by it, but I had fun with it a lot. I've mentioned on the show previously, I've kind of been dealing with, like, tendonitis right now. And, like, literally my doctor was like, just rotate your wrists a lot. And then I got to review a game where literally the way you control the way you play is by rotating your wrists a lot. So it was, like, perfect. It was great. It was very fun. The flying and the combat, I think, is really, really fun. It's just sort of like a thin game. It doesn't have a whole lot of meat on its bones. Like, the progression is sort of flat, and the story really fell flat for me. But the interesting thing that I've been noticing too is, along with some other reviews have generally been around where I was at, right? Like, positive, but not, like, hugely glowing. Not that every review has to be the same. And in fact, like, I've been seeing a lot of people, or some people feel the way I do, but also some people feel the opposite of I do, where they're like, I thought the combat was really thin and the story was great. So, like, there's obviously some different opinions out there in that regard, which is totally fine. But yeah, it's the big takeaway, I think, is it's not like the reason to buy PSVR that I think some people might have been hoping it was going to be. And it's not like Marvel Spider-Man, now Marvel's Iron Man. It's not like that level of PS4 exclusive. It's just sort of like another good VR game, which is, you know, not the end of the world, right? It's a good VR game. It's just not like, it just didn't blow me away or anything.
For sure. Yeah, I totally agree with you on, I have to see more of the story to sort of comment on it overall, but the flying stuff feels great. Like, yeah, having that experience is so fun. And when you do get the hang of it and being able to pull off some really fun maneuvers and just dodging out of the way of an enemy or just figuring out how to land a shot can be so fun. I do hope that it does well enough, though, at least that we do get a sequel. Because like you're saying, some stuff feels thin. Hopefully a sequel can kind of really, they have the groundwork and they have the basis for what the game can be, so here's what they can build off of.
Yeah, but on that same thing, and we've talked about this off the show before, but like, dude, I don't want a sequel if it's going to use Move controllers again.
Yeah, right? It needs to be on new hardware.
Yeah, like the work they did with making the headset like tracking work well is shockingly impressive, like really, really wonderfully impressive. But at the end of the day, like they deserve so much credit. The developers deserve so much credit for what they milked out of this hardware. But like, those Move controllers are a decade old, and they show, man, like it really does show that these things were not designed for this type of experience at all. And like, it works, it functions, it's great. But like, I don't know if I want to play Marvel's Iron Man 2 VR 2 using a Move controller in 3 years or whatever. Like, that just doesn't sound appealing to me.
Yeah, a PSVR 2 is sorely needed, and some new controllers that take advantage of everything that's happened since those Move controllers came out would definitely be a huge help to a sequel for this. But like you were saying, a huge kudos to those devs for getting what they have out of the PSVR and those
Move controllers. It's an achievement. It's an achievement, absolutely, what they've done. It's just an achievement limited by the tech they're working with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. If you've been playing Marvel's Iron Man VR, obviously we try to keep as much of a beat on PSVR as we can, especially as we head into the next generation. Let us know what you've been thinking about Iron Man VR, and we'll hopefully read some impressions on the show next week. But that's going to wrap it up, I think, unfortunately, for episode 654, because I could keep talking about Iron Man VR, about Kingdom Hearts, about a lot of stuff that we've been talking about. But thank you, Tom and Cam, for joining me this week. Beyond is normally live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services around the world. Of course, you can go check out all the rest of our work on IGN.com and youtube.com/IGN. And Cam, anything you want to direct people to, particularly that you've worked on recently, or just sort of generally where to find you on Twitter and online?
Nothing particularly editorial-wise or anything like that, but I write editorials quite a bit on DualShocker. So yeah, if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at the Cinephile Guy. I don't know why I said Twitter like that. And then you can follow DualShockers at DualShockers. And DualShockers.com, we have a very great staff of writers who are passionate and love video games. So please, please give the site a look-see. Appreciate it. And thank you, Jonathan and Tom, for inviting me on. And thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll definitely, like I said, have you back and definitely talk about Kingdom Hearts more in the future.
And always talk about Kingdom Hearts.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm sure we could get at least another hour out pretty easily.
Oh, 100% easy.
We'd get there. But anyway, that's gonna about wrap us up for this episode. You can find me on Twitter at JM Dornbush and Tom at Tom R Marks. Though sometimes we live by Tom's advice and just don't tweet it instead. And so maybe you won't see us on Twitter sometimes when we take breaks. But anyway, thank you so much for listening and or watching this episode. We hope you're safe. We hope you're well. Be good to one another. And as always, beyond.
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 Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.